Welcome to the Tate Talks podcast.
This podcast has been very kindly sponsored by JumpCloud for MSPs.
Hi everyone, welcome to another Tate Talks podcast. Today I had a great chat with Mark Copeman of MSP Wingman. We covered a whole lot of ground, from his background within Customer Thermometer to the Help Desk Habits program and his new book, MSP Secrets Revealed, Volume 2, which is out now. We also spoke about my inability to complete books and some tips he's given me to do that, and a whole lot more. So hope you enjoy. Hi, Mark. Thanks so much for joining us today for yet another Tate Talks episode. Really looking forward to speaking to you. But before we get going, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Oh, goodness me, Chris. How long have you got? I've got a bit more grey hair than I used to have. I'm 52, and I've been working in the channel now for about 13 years. I stumbled across it, like perhaps many who listen to this, almost by accident, when I founded a business called Customer Thermometer, which was back in 2010. And we thought we were aiming at the marketing agency world. Well, that was our plan. But within a year of launching the service, suddenly all these things called MSPs started to sign up. And it was like, wow, what is this? And kind of the rest is history, really. So we pivoted the business a little, and that's where I started to work with a whole bunch of different vendors and integrated into a lot of the PSAs. And during the 7-8 years I had with the business before I exited 2018, I guess we had, well, many hundreds of MSPs who were using the service, and I'd spoken to probably the majority of them. So just fell in love with the channel, Chris, and here I am ever since, really.
Well, that's great to hear, actually. And it's probably when I think I first got to know you during the Customer Thermometer years. So for those that kind of don't know, what was the big idea around that, and why was it, do you think it resonated so much with MSPs?
Oh yeah, it was a very simple idea, like in theory all the best businesses, in that survey fatigue was a thing, and people were just sick of the 20 question surveys, and as a result of that, as a recipient, you'd see it, your eyes glaze over, you delete the email, and the sender would therefore get very, very little feedback, if any, right across the different types of requests which would come out across businesses. So we thought, isn't it better to just get some feedback rather than none? And I don't know if we were actually the first, but I always claim to be the world's first one-click feedback tool. These days, the smiley faces are kind of to a penny. But the idea of a single click followed by perhaps leaving a comment really did resonate, and still does. I mean, the service still exists today alongside, you know, plenty of competition out there. And so as a result, our response rates were through the roof, you know, compared to the traditional surveys, which meant that our customers were getting lots and lots of feedback coming through, which they could take action on, Chris. And I think that was one of the key things about the service. Even if somebody did fill in a 20-question survey, what on earth do you do with it? You know, it's got to be huge volumes in order to start to see trends and so on. But actually, what most people want when they give feedback is to have it acknowledged, and in an ideal world, have something done about it, particularly if it's negative or it's some kind of sort of critical feedback, I suppose. But sadly, so often the corporate black hole exists and nobody ever hears from everybody again once they've submitted it. So that's what Customer Thermometer aimed to do. And it worked beautifully for MSPs, particularly when it came to feedback on ticket responses, but also those sort of monthly polls, which perhaps roll up into QBRs and so on. So yeah, there were lots of uses for it.
Yeah, it was such a cool idea. So congrats on that. Because I remember each of the PSAs pretty much had a kind of feedback system built into them, post tickets and things, but they were so clunky and, as you say, were just not easy to do. Whereas the kind of just clicking on a smiley face or an angry or frowny face made such a big difference. So it was I remember it being huge news at the time. And I remember seeing you
at multiple events around the world engaging with MSPs. So it's obviously an international thing, a universal problem. So
yeah, they were good days. They were really good days. I was very proud and still am very proud. You know, I wander into an MSP's office and they've still got it on the dashboards. And, you know, I sat here on my office floor all those years ago with wireframes scattered around me. And it's wonderful to see that, you know, 13 years on, it's still being used as a concept. It's great. Yeah, very proud.
Yeah, you should be. And so going back a little sort of before customer thermometer, I mean, how did you get to that point? What did your career look like before then?
The marketing agency world, really. I set up and subsequently sold a couple of marketing agencies. In the early days, I founded a business called Twist Media, and we were into video before video was really a thing. And, you know, I'm old enough to remember the fact that someone would say, well, I can't play the video because I don't have QuickTime installed. And, you know, the corporate IT team won't allow me to go and install it. So, OK, well, you can't watch the video then. I mean, it's hard to believe now, Chris. You know, we've come quite a long way. But that's where I started. I started and did a lot of sort of video and animation work and presentation work, I guess, for the larger corporates. I also got into the sort of the green screen world, which now I guess is sort of commonplace. And in fact, we have a little annex building next door to our house here. And I turned that into a green screen studio. So we had the full curve and I do interviews in there and we have clients come over and they were really good times, I have to say. From there, I guess that's when sort of customer thermometer came about. And so I press pause, I guess, on the agency side of things. But I've always loved it. And I guess it's quite nice to be back in it now. It's probably my first love, just trying to help people to deliver their message in a compelling way, to get whatever results that they're looking for.
Yeah. And obviously this kind of leans in a little bit to the book that you've very recently released, MSP Secrets Revealed, Episode 2, where you kind of give a whole bunch of tips to MSPs. And so I guess it's difficult to know where to start because you've got so many tips in there, over 100 it says on the book, and it's many, many pages. But what are the sort of challenges that do you see MSPs facing in the back end of 2023 and beyond? And what would you sort of suggest that they do to try and remedy them?
Well, that's a big question, isn't it? And of course, one of those secrets, Chris, is contributed by you. And, you know, you've been hiding your light under a bushel there. You know, we shouldn't forget that. So, yeah, 101 secrets. It only took me 18 months to curate it. I mean, goodness me, it's like it's very hard to people. A lot of people are very willing to give, but actually getting them to give is a different thing. So I'm really pleased with the end result. As you say, you know, 101 secrets. And I to touch on your question there, the themes I see, I guess, I added a mergers and acquisitions chapter this time around compared to episode one. Obviously, a hugely buoyant industry. And so that was an interesting one for me to get stuck into and an interview and chat to people that have bought, people who are selling, and also a broker in between as well. So I managed to get sort of all sides to the coin there. But in terms of challenges, I think it's the ones that have been around for a little while, and I think they will probably always be there. The first one being recruitment and finding the right people in a in a tough environment, depending on where you are in the world. Although I'm, you know, fortunate that I get to talk to people right across the globe, and it seems that these problems exist pretty much everywhere. You know, it's very rare you hear someone going, oh, no, we've got a massive glut of talent in our town or city. I mean, that's pretty unusual to hear that. There's a bunch of recruitment ideas in the book. One of my favorites is I actually put it in there word for word. It's a wonderful job ad, Chris, really. There's no other word for it, but it's a job ad like you've never seen before. From a wonderful man called Benji Sawyer, Sawyer Solutions. I can't remember where he's based in the US. But he's gone all quirky. He's set out to differentiate his business and to attract the right sort of talent, but doing it in a really wonderful way. And I'm going to put a confession out there right now. I've used his technique in the last month with an advert for someone to come and work with me. And I had so many people go, Mark, I'm going to steal your advert. But actually, secretly, I kind of borrowed and begged and borrowed it from Benji there in the book. So I think recruitment is the one big area, Chris. And the second one, no question is lead generation, for want of a better word, but sales and marketing. And as I stand here in my office today talking to you, I speak to around about a dozen MSPs every week, new ones quite often within those dozen. And the majority I'm speaking to because they struggle with creating those new conversations. And so many of them say to me, referrals used to be a wonderful thing, but we've got beyond that now. They've kind of dried up. You know, what do we do? How can we move forward? So there's plenty of stuff in the book around sales and marketing techniques as well.
Yeah, which is you've hit upon the two most common topics that people mention, which is recruitment, and it's difficult to know how to resolve that, except some great tips that you've got in there. And I'll link the book and everything into the description. But then you touched upon sales and marketing, and I know that marketing is obviously your thing, and sales is obviously part of, or ties together very nicely. And I've seen you speak recently about MSP websites in terms of, and I've looked at hundreds of MSP websites during my career. A lot of them are very templatized, so you can almost see where they got that from or which program they're working on. And some are just very good, and some are sort of, for want of a better word, sort of pretty terrible. I mean, what do you think is the, well, so let's ask the question a different way. What do you see as the purpose of the website being? And do you think the MSPs are getting it? Are they getting better? Or are they just are they as bad as they've ever been?
They're as bad as they've ever been as far as I see. And maybe I only see ones where people recognize that they're struggling. I'm sure there's some great stuff out there. I don't get to see much of it, sadly. The purpose couldn't be more simple, Chris. And I bore myself sometimes with my little stock phrases, but I keep using them because I really do believe that they're accurate. And simply put, the site is there to do one thing, and that is to start a conversation with a prospect. That's all it has to do. It doesn't have to do anything more or anything less. Once you've grab those contact details from the site, then that individual falls into a sales process, which you have complete control over, pretty much anyway. It then comes back to personalities and people dealing with people and sales process and making sure that you get back to people in a timely fashion and a professional and all those sorts of things. But the website hasn't got to do any of that because it's done its job by that point, and it's moving on to the next phase. So sure, it's there to do some sort of subsidiary things. One of them being, I did a review just this morning, who had a site which had a brilliant careers page, very unusual to see. And I think a secondary purpose is to attract talent. The idea of having a sales pipeline is great, but a talent pipeline, which ties back into recruitment conversation a few minutes ago, I think is super important. So you are actually selling your business to potential employees. And there's not many people that do that very well. So that's kind of a secondary purpose. And perhaps a tertiary one is for existing clients, where to get support, how to pay a bill, all those sorts of things. But as I always tend to say to people, put that sort of stuff, tuck it away a bit. Put it in the footer, just tuck it away. It shouldn't be up front and center. The up front and center stuff should be there, in my opinion, for prospects and for creating those new conversations.
Okay, and if you were listening, the MSP is listening now. If you said to them, sort of, go to your website, go and have a look at your own company website, what's the one thing that you would tell them to sort of look out for or to check that they are doing right?
Is the message clear? Is that message clear? Have you got a really good grip on who you want to be talking to and explaining what it is you do, what that proposition is, and effectively marrying the two together? Less is more, sometimes, certainly for a newer business, it's perfectly okay to have a one-page type website. You haven't got to invent 15 pages just to pad it out. Sometimes a decent homepage is all you need, particularly when you're starting out. So I think clarity of message, personality, Chris, as well, is just so important. You used the word a few minutes ago, you know, template. I mean, it is template after template out there. And put yourself in a prospect's shoes. You know, if you're in the market, you've fallen out of love with your current provider, or you've outgrown your sort of DIY solutions, or you've seen some stuff around about cybersecurity issues that I need to get my house in order. You're going to be shopping around. You're going to be seeing a whole bunch of stuff, and so if you can somehow make your site stand out, so that you can show people, good people want to work with good people. That's just human nature. That's not going away anytime soon. So I think getting that personality across, proposition right, and making sure you're talking to your target market is what you need to be doing.
Yeah, that all makes perfect sense. And I think it leads us on to the next question, which is, I guess, is more of a opportunity to learn more about what you're doing now. Obviously, you're from a marketing background. You're working with MSPs around the world at multiple events. But what's your day-to-day look like now, and how can you help MSPs?
Well, you know, I love my day-to-day, Chris. I'm so lucky. I do genuinely bounce out of bed. I know that's quite a boring thing to say, isn't it? But I'm going to say it anyway. It's a lovely thing. And probably 5% of my life, I still have my Help Desk Habits program. Still is an amazing thing in terms of, you know, interest out there. It's 4 years old now. I've had nearly 3,500 people that have been through that certification. So that sits sort of over there and ticks away very, very nicely. And sometimes I get asked to do speeches and so on. And I love talking about customer experience and how those technicians and engineers on those service desks and help desks can really make a difference to your business, which then kind of leads me on to the other 95% of my life, which is wingman marketing. So I joined that business. I bought into that business actually a year or so ago. Dave Sutton, my very awesome business partner with an enormous marketing brain, he set up the business 6 years ago off the back of being in part of an MSP himself and helping to grow that business, double, triple it, I think I seem to remember, through his sales and marketing efforts. And he's built an amazing business. We've got a wonderful team up in Essex here in the UK. I'm the outlier, Chris. I stand near Windsor, so I'm kind of the guy that occasionally comes into the office and ruffles a few feathers once in a while. But it's a great business. We help MSPs right across the world. We have about 120 clients that we work with at the moment across North America, across UK, Australia, New Zealand. And we help these businesses to start conversations with prospects. That's what we do, and we do it in lots of different ways. You can find out more about us at wingmanmspmarketing.com. How about that for a plug?
Perfect. And I'll make sure to put all those details in below. But let's just very, very quickly jump back to the 5%, because I've not asked you about this. And I think that we're kind of maybe assuming that everyone's aware of what the Help Desk Habits program is, but maybe if you can just expand on that a little for those that don't.
Yeah, sure. It kind of stems back to my time Customer Thermometer, where I met and spoke with hundreds of MSP organizations, and I saw the same sorts of issues cropping up time and time again, whereby the business owners recognized the importance of having good technical people, but who had personality and could relate to clients in the right sort of ways to deliver that customer experience. And traditionally, it's been quite a tricky thing to do. Those technicians typically have a very high IQ and a relatively low EQ. And the idea behind Help Desk Habits, which is 50 different habits of around about 5 hours worth of me broken up into bite-sized chunks on video, explaining and hopefully inspiring people to think slightly differently about how they work with clients. And the importance of dealing with people in the right way. And if you can instill those values, those messages into your team, then you start to get the great reviews coming through. You get the contract renewals coming through. You get the referrals, you get the recommendations, the four R's, as I guess I like to refer to it. And most of that, I mean, yes, of course, you have to, you know, answer tickets in the right way. You've got to do it in a timely fashion. But quite often when people are thinking about, will they renew, will they refer, they're thinking back to those human beings. And so that's what Help Desk Habits is all about. There's a certification in there as well, Chris. Again, it's something I'm very proud of. I didn't honestly think 4 years ago when I built the program, it would still be being talked about and being bought on a, you know, regular basis, but it is. So that there's still clearly need for it out there, which is a wonderful thing.
No, I would recommend it. I've looked at the program and I think that it also comes back to the personality again as well. I guess, you know, service desk people is, and service desk staff can answer questions and be, robots or AI or whatever, but it's not replacing that kind of human actual interaction between the people, you know, people calling up or messaging with the problem and having some kind of personality involved to resolve it. I think that's important.
Yeah, totally. I mean, one of my other stock phrases that I bore myself with is remembering the human beings on the end of the endpoints. You know, we all get very, very rightly obsessed with KPIs and technology and so on. But actually, once in a while, just look up, remember who sits behind those, remember the days that they're having, remember those livelihoods and what you're actually trying to do. And that does change your mindset a little bit, I have to say.
Yeah. Okay. Well, another topic now, which is around what you're doing. Well, could be MSP focused, don't necessarily need to be MSP focused when you're relaxing. Obviously, you do a lot of flights and I guess train journeys, all kinds of things. So you have a chance to listen, or books. So are you a book person, a podcast person, a YouTube person? What do you do to relax, and what sort of stuff do you enjoy?
Relax. Yes. Very good. I must write down a little reminder to do that once in a while. When I go on holiday, I love to read, Chris. My family has always laughed at me. You know, it will always be a business book, always. And one of the books that really inspired me before Help Desk Habits came along, and in fact, it's almost the reason behind it, is a book called Key Person of Influence by Daniel Priestley. And he's an Australian entrepreneur. He's written three or four books now. And it's such a simple principle, but I actually recommend it to a lot of our MSP clients. And it's, you know, key person of influence. It's all about how do you become known in your ecosystem. So in my particular case, you know, it's if you write books, if you stand up and speak, if you participate in podcasts just like this, guess what? People start to hear about you. And eventually, Chris, I mean, I'd like to class myself as a C-list IT celebrity. You know, I'm obviously not at your level, B-list maybe, or even A-list, I don't know. But I'm getting there. And it's because of these sorts of activities, which was all inspired by that particular book. So when I head off on holiday, actually later on this week, I've got, and I know I'm late to the party, but Gino Wickman's book, Traction, is sat on my table just in front of me there. I know the principles. I've read the summaries, and we're just starting to implement some of this stuff in our marketing business because it works just as well as an MSP. But I want to really understand it for, you know, thinking about next year. So I'm genuinely looking forward to lying on a sunbed with a cocktail in my hand, reading a book, because it's just not something I do when I'm not on holiday. So that's what I'm looking forward to doing.
Well, I'm just off toward a key person of influence then, because I'm very much a Z list in the MSP, and I could maybe make it up to kind of a J list or something if I read that. So I will link to both of those into the description. And again, I'm always very much, I need to improve this. I know I need to read more books. And I kind of hear from people like yourselves and from all the, you know, everyone in the industry, from, I guess, Bill Gates downwards, telling me the value of reading books. But I can never seem to get into the mindset on business books. I read quite a lot of fiction, but the business thing I probably need to sort of try and put more effort into.
I think you've got to enjoy it. You've got to want to do it. I think, you know, sometimes you get further away into a book, and if it's hard work, that, you know, there's two schools of thought. There'll be some people that go, this isn't for me, and put it down and just accept the fact you're not going to finish it. And there's others that who will, you know, really try and plow on and get through it and get to the end and go, why did I bother? So I think you've got to be in the right mood. Sometimes fiction's a great thing. But if you're thinking about where do you need to go next, that's why I love the holiday, taking a break and being inspired by people. I love the true story stuff as well. I mean, it's one of the reasons for writing the Secrets book. You know, I was constantly hearing from people telling their story. And I love that. I love hearing people's stories, whether it's business or otherwise, because you can learn from their experiences. You can be inspired by their experience, or, you know, accept the fact you don't want to go down that path. And that's good too. So, yeah, I'm all for being inspired by others. I think that probably sums up my reading material.
Yeah, well, I'm the sort of person that right behind me, I've got a copy of Atomic Habits, and I couldn't create enough of a habit to finish the book. That's the problem for me. I kind of start them and then I am not disciplined enough to finish them.
Well, the link to that, there's The Power of Habit by a gentleman called Charles Duhigg as well, which I read shortly before Help Desk Habits became a thing. And I recognized the power of habit. I've got Atomic Habits up in front of me as well. Such a powerful thing. And only, you know, over the last 30, 40 years of this part of the brain really been understood. And when you can, you know, figure out how to tap into it and recognize that if you do want to make change, whether it's in life or business, then you have to do it in a habitual way. To say you're going to go and do something, the brain, and I won't bore you with all that now, but the brain will naturally default to its sort of standard position unless you practice and turn that particular thing into a habit. So pick it up again, Chris. Give it another go. Go on, I dare you.
I will, and I look forward to everyone seeing the difference in me when I'm kind of super disciplined and fully on board. So I'll let you know how that goes. So
get off your six pack, it's all linked. Yes, yes.
Absolutely. Yeah, you'll definitely know when you see me next. So a couple of quick final questions, one of which you can answer it in one of two ways, I guess, which is if you were starting your career again today, would you have done anything differently, or would you do anything differently? Or another way to answer that is, if you were sort of speaking to someone just entering the MSP space or at the beginning of their career, what advice would you give them?
I'll perhaps take the second way of, the second question, really. And I think certainly in this industry, and if I'm honest, it probably applies to any, is just exploit and make the most of partnerships, networks and people. Exploit's probably the wrong word. I don't mean it like that, but take advantage of and make a conscious effort to get to know people in your industry. You know, the know, like, and trust thing is super, super important. But don't be that person who just takes. You know, you've got to give, you've got to help, you've got to figure out ways that you can connect people and do good things for people. But do that consistently. It's almost coming back to the habit thing. Because if you do, these things compound. Certainly, I think, you know, us as guys, Chris, I think, well, my wife always tells me this, you know, we're always after that instant gratification. We want to see results like immediately. But actually, sometimes it's okay to accept that it might take 5 years to build a network in a particular industry. It might take 2 years to crack a corporate account by the time you've sort of found your way in there and money starts to flow. But don't be put off by that. And I think, yeah, the power of partnerships, working with people, networks, I kind of got earlier in my career. But I think if I'd have really got it, I perhaps would have just moved things forward a little bit faster. But for me now, over the last 10 years, it's been everything to me. It really has. So that's what I would advise people starting out to really harness, because it's an incredibly powerful thing.
Yeah, and it's a great community to be part of for that to happen. I think it's I'm not saying it's unique because I don't know a lot of the other communities, but I think from an MSP perspective, the vendors and the partners and everyone's so willing to share information. So I guess my advice, if anyone was ever going to ask, would be sort of don't be afraid to ask and to speak to people at certainly events and make these connections. They're so important.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I've been in around a handful of different industries, and I've never known anything like it. You know, to see businesses in the same town who are effectively competitors collaborating to help each other out, I think just says it all. You know, the way people come together when there are breaches and, you know, incidents out there, you know, even things like the CompTIA 911 response team, for example, you know, which is a tremendous thing. And I can give you the link to that, Chris, as well, for anybody listening, because it's amazing. And I think it just sums up how this industry is. And I think, you know, I for one, feel incredibly privileged to be part of it. The way that people help each other out, I think is extraordinary. And that's why I love being part of it.
Yeah, well, please share that link and I'll make sure to link it below. And right, the final question, and I'm not sure whether this is going to be easier for you than everyone else has asked or more difficult, because I'm going to ask for a tip that you would offer to MSPs. And obviously, you've literally written the book. You've got over 200 tips for MSPs. So I don't know whether you're going to pick one of those and maybe upset everyone that you don't pick, or you're going to pick your own tip or whatever. But we're speaking to an audience of MSPs. So what kind of single tip would you give them to help them with their business?
Wow. Yes, I have 202 written down and a few others lurking around in my head. You've put me on the spot there, Chris. So I'm going to one of the headlines in the last book, which was The Secret, was submitted by a gentleman called Kyle Christensen, who's a very good man. He's been around the block, and I titled his secret business. I think it's business should be boring. That doesn't sound very inspiring, does it? But what he is saying, and I love this, is that, you know, business is, putting aside all the people stuff that I've just referred to, at its core, business is a set of processes. And if you can refine those, I guess it's a bit like the Traction book as well, but if you can refine those and keep doing the same things that you see working, then business should be boring. It should. You should be having the same review meetings. You should be having the same conversations with employees, with clients. And it just turns into one big process. If bits of it aren't working, of course, you need to fix that and change it. But when you see it working and you've got the right team around you, it should just be just humming away like a little factory. And he puts it better than I do. But it's the most bizarre of statements. And that's why I think it really stood out for me, because it's not something I'd ever considered before. But yeah, business should be boring. If yours is always crazy and on fire, I think you're doing something wrong. And so getting it back under control, turning it into something which is boring, might be something you would consider.
Awesome. Well, yes, I love that. Business should be boring. So thanks so much for your time. Really enjoyed catching up. I will put the links in the description for both the books below, because I think that there are some amazing sort of nuggets of information in there for MSPs. And it's all written in such a sort of fun, easy to consume kind of way, which I like. Sort of pick up, read a couple of tips, and then sort of put it back down again. So it's a great resource for MSPs. Thanks so much for putting it all together. I guess it's just, if you didn't do it, I don't know who else would. So yeah, thanks for doing that. And thanks for everything else you do in the MSP community. I know everyone sort of loves having you around, and I've seen you sort of speak on many different topics, and we love how sort of engaging you are and entertaining for MSPs. So yeah, keep doing what you're doing.
Thanks, Chris. Real pleasure. Appreciate inviting me on.
I'll speak to you soon. Cheers.
Cheers.
And there you have it. Thanks, Mark, for joining us today. Thanks, everyone, for listening. I've put links into the description of everything we spoke about, all the books that Mark mentioned. I'd highly recommend you check them out. Certainly the MSP Secrets Revealed, as it's really, really useful for MSPs. But until next time, goodbye.
This podcast has been very kindly sponsored by JumpCloud for MSPs. JumpCloud for MSPs provides managed service providers a platform for delivering modern IT services that are identity-centric, cloud-native, and vendor-agnostic. Using JumpCloud's Open Directory platform, MSPs can iteratively replace point solutions by unifying device, identity, and access management. To learn more, please visit jumpcloud.com/MSP or email the team at partners@jumpcloud.com.